My talk this morning is called Building Our Future, A Vision Quest. Now, I wanted to break this down to start with, that say that there are visions and then there are vision quests. And to me, those are two different kinds of experiences. The first happens to you, and the second one you go out looking for. An example of vision comes from the Jewish tradition. I put the Torah on the table here, and you're more than welcome to look at it. It's in the Christian tradition, it would be called the Old Testament, but in the Jewish tradition, it is Book of Enlightenment. So in the Jewish tradition, we look at Exodus 2. And to quote, it says, "Now Moses was keeping the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the wilderness, and he came to the mountain of God, unto Horeb. And the angel of Jehovah appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I'm going to turn aside now and see this great sight. Why, the bush is not burnt. And when Jehovah saw that he had turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel and say unto them, The God of our fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say to them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. I am that I am. Or as Popeye would say, I am what I am. I am. Am. I am what I am. Who thought that Popeye was a great biblical scholar? So I am what I am. I am that I am. I am God. I am existence, life, isness. That quality of isness. Now, Moses wasn't looking for a vision that day. Right? He was tending the sheep. He was having an ordinary day. He happened to wander out into the edge of the wilderness, and bam, right in front of him, a burning bush. Now that vision, on an ordinary day, is definitely an attention grabber. Wouldn't you say so? Walking down the street, suddenly there's this bush that's no smoke, just flames. An indestructible energy. When I think about a burning bush that doesn't consume. It's a recognizable reality, yet a reality that didn't act in the known way, perhaps indicating a power that's greater than the known everyday reality. Have you had a burning bush in your life? A moment that grabbed you out of the ordinary, that befuddled your mind and your heart? That you didn't have an explanation for, and yet there was enough reality to it that you could relate to it. Did you know that the image of the burning bush is the symbol used by the Presbyterian Church of Scotland, Ireland, Brazil, Singapore, Malaysia, and Canada? Isn't that interesting? The burning bush. Visions tend to catch your attention. And they usually, by their nature, because they are ordinary and extraordinary at the same time, we remember them. They may not be understood. At least in my life, the visions that I've had that I didn't understand, they've stuck with me all my life. And they're kind of like a koan. You know, I keep some part of my brain every once in a while goes back to me and go, what was that? What did that mean? And sometimes I have an answer, and sometimes I'm satisfied by that answer, and then it will sort of slide away and it will come up again. As a category, the burning bush vision comes out from everyday life and therefore dramatic. It can be life-changing. It's not chosen. It's not necessarily looked for. In other words, there's no quest involved. Then there's another kind of vision, a quality of vision. Perhaps it would be called even a lack of vision, although it has its own particular dramaticness because it too comes out of everyday, ordinary life, unbidden. So I tell you a story of what I'm trying to say here. Many years ago when my children were small, so maybe 18 years ago, we were invited up to Alaska, where we have a whole lot of family that live and have lived in Alaska for a long time. So I went and visited my cousin, and she lives in the middle of Alaska, about an hour or so up from the Denali Park, if you know the area, and about an hour below Fairbanks, in a place called Nenana, which means the place where the rivers meet. They own the last family general store in all of Alaska. It's been there for generations. She's also the priest for the town. She's also the banker for the town. She knows everybody. She's a busy lady. Oh, she's also on the school board, president of the school board, or at least at that time she was. So when we arrived there, it was summer. So in Alaska, as you know, it's light 24 hours a day. There's no change in the light. At least that's not what I experienced. It was also a summer when there was a lot of forest fires. And though the forest fires were not close to us, there was a haze over everything. So that you couldn't see the mountain, you couldn't see the trees, other than the ones that were right in front of you. And everything had this sort of lemon yellow grayness. It was like being on a different planet. I felt taken out of ordinary time. And in this extraordinary time that made me think about myself and who am I against this lemon yellow smoky haze of an unknown, ever, never changing light world. And I was an active person back down here in British Columbia in Vancouver. I had lots of titles. You know, I was teacher, I was chaplain, I was a board member, I was looked up to, I had cred in my community, and all of this disappeared in the middle of Alaska, in the middle of this log cabin. I became a blank slate. I said, who am I if I'm not all these things that I do, all these titles? And I tell you, it was not a very comfortable time. It was a very uncomfortable time because I wanted to grasp at some of these definitions so that I would know who I was. And in that particular world that was both ordinary and really not ordinary at all, I was just a woman in a body. I started cleaning the kitchen of the log cabin that had never, ever been cleaned, I don't think. And nobody cared whether it got cleaned or not. I needed something to do as I contemplated, who am I? And I can't tell you that I had a great epiphany. I clung in this blankness to the fact that I was a good person, and I tried to stay with the emptiness. So it had a profound effect because I came back and went, I am not necessarily these titles. I am not necessarily all these doings. I am just a being. And there's days I'm comfortable with that, and days where I'm not comfortable with that. So hold on to that story. I'll come back to it later. So then there is, those are the visions, different kinds of visions that happen that change our lives. And then there's the vision quest. Now, to go on a vision quest is to have a clear idea that one is seeking something, seeking insight, new understanding, a new knowledge, a new experience. There's often a period of preparation. It's usually a period of fasting, of preparing the body, a period of prayer when you're getting in alignment with yourself and the great unknown. There's, well, for example, great vision quests. Siddhartha sat under the Bodhi tree, stayed there until he was enlightened. When he got up, he was the Buddha. Jesus went out into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, wrestled with Satan, came back, the Messiah. In North America, in the Aboriginal traditions, both in North America and Australia, and I'm sure many other places, there are the traditions within that community of young people as a rite of passage from being young to being adult, from youth to adult, of going on a ritual vision quest. The traditional vision quest, the traditional vision question consists of the seeker going out into the natural world, usually alone, for a number of days and nights, usually fasting in order to become attuned to the rhythms of the natural world and themselves. It provides an opportunity to listen to the world and communicate with the powers that are there. During this time of intense spiritual communication, a person can receive profound insight into themselves and the world. This insight, typically in the form of a dream or a vision, can relate directly to their purpose and destiny in life. In many Native American traditions, the vision quest is a turning point in that person's life, usually a young person's life, and it's taken in order to find themselves and their intended spiritual direction or life direction. Now, we don't have a system in our society, in the society that I move in, and that probably most of you move in, for this kind of process. But that doesn't mean that our young people don't need it and create it on their own. Perhaps unconsciously, perhaps consciously. Unfortunately, often without the guide of wise elders to help them get through those times of confusion and despair, as those Satans, as those temptations, as those monsters come up. But I hear today that our young people, our young adults, they're asking those questions. What is my future? What is my purpose? And where do I look for the answers? Not even what's the meaning of it all, but just those core questions. Who am I and why am I here? So about 35 years ago, in my early 20s, I was wrestling with those questions, as I'm sure many of you at some point in your life have wrestled with those questions. In my day, for example, my cousin Usha, she went off to India for years and lived in an ashram. That was her vision quest, to put it in those terms. Others here in Vancouver, you know, they would leave the city, move to Hornby Island, go back to the land, try to make that work for them, find their vision there. The people joined intentional communities, either with leaders or intentionally with not leaders. Many were seeking insight through hallucinogenic drugs and reading books that spoke about initiations and interspecies communication. Now, I don't see that those strategies are far out, frankly, or strange behaviors. I see that there is something inside us that seeks to know the answers to these questions. Who am I? What is my purpose in this life? It used to be the church that would give you the answers, and many of you left those churches because they were not feeding you the place in you that was hungry for some kind of truth that made sense to you, right? Or they just shut down your questions entirely. So you've moved on. I think we have an innate pull in us, need to answer, to find an answer to those questions. They are essential questions. In our Unitarian tradition, we recognize that this is an innate part of who we are as human beings, to ask these questions, and we create environments, it's happening right downstairs now, that foster an environment where people, children, youth, adults even, can ask these questions. Again, when I was 20, I was riding on the 49th bus along 49th in Vancouver, looking out the window, watching the trees pass by, and out of the middle of nowhere, suddenly, some part of me very loudly says, "You are a spiritual being." What? Where'd that come from? I like it, but what does it mean, I said to myself. And what do I do to be a spiritual person? I didn't have a society that would help me through that. There was nowhere, I didn't have anywhere to go at that time. There was no community that would companion me through those questions. So I made it up for myself. I had some sense that it had to do with something bigger than myself, and to me that was nature. So I had a ritual. I started my own ritual. I would go up to the Queen Elizabeth Park on Sunday mornings, and I would find, I had a particular grove of trees that I sat in. I was on a vision quest. I was trying to create the system for it. And I think what I was doing is I was trying to listen to the world through nature. I was trying to commune with that thing that I sensed was greater than me. And I would go on intuitive walks after I had settled myself in this grove of trees. And I felt that I was connected to the natural world. And I would then walk out into the city and listen to my intuition and go where. I tried to develop and strengthen my intuition because in my mind at the time, my intuition was somehow connected to this thing that was greater than me. And so I was walking along the street, 49th again. I don't know, that comes up again and again in my life. I was just listening to the world, enjoying everything, communing with the thing that was nature to me at the time. And my intuition said, "Turn here, go in here." I sat down, big room, about this size. And I was struck by the beauty of the architecture of the building, the natural wood and the windows that went from ceiling to floor. And somebody had thought about putting seashells down on the ground outside the building so that when I looked through the window, I saw a representation of the ocean there. And I listened to Philip Hewitt speak. I have no idea what he said. But the combination of this environment and the feeling of the place, my heart cracked open and I had this overwhelming sense that I had found my home. I had never heard about Unitarians before. I had no idea where I was. But that was my vision. Unbidden, but I was seeking it. Well, maybe it wasn't unbidden. Maybe I was seeking it. I look back over the last 37 years, and I see that the Unitarian Church has become my home, my spiritual home. It's not the only one, but it is a significant one. It's been a place of learning for me, a place of refuge, a place of opportunity. It's been a connection to people that hold similar values to me. People who I can grow with, people who I admire, people who I learn from. It has been a constant in my life. Like a home, I have come from it and gone back, left it, returned. I bring back to the Unitarian Church lessons that I learned from other communities. I bring back gifts and I take gifts away. I'm fed by this denomination. And especially I'm filled with hope because I know that there are people, Unitarians, Unitarian Universalist communities, all around the world who are dedicated to making this a better, fairer, and more just world. I am proud to know Unitarians, and I am proud to be one. When I was walking down 49th Street 37 years ago, I didn't know what was going to happen. No idea. Like Aboriginal youth who have gone on a vision quest and received a sense of purpose and direction in their lives, I am ever so grateful and humbled by whatever that great spirit was that led me on that Sunday morning to the Vancouver Church at the corner of Oak and 49th. Now, you may not be wanting a vision quest, but what is your vision of yourself? Who do you know yourself to be? Are you prepared to imagine yourself starting anew in this new year of 5,774 in the Jewish calendar? Are you prepared to imagine yourself as a blank slate against that lemon gray sky in a world that is both ordinary and extraordinary? Asking that question, who am I today? So we begin today. Imagine that you are a blank slate. Don't hang on to where you came from or the degrees you hold or what you did yesterday or who you know or the job you do or all those other identities. You can start now, as you can every single morning, a blank slate. And you can choose what to put on it. As God said to Moses, I am that I am. We are that we are. We don't need more. Being is enough. It's a great place to start a vision quest if that's what you want. We all may decide or discover, like T.S. Eliot did, that we return to the place from which we began, and we know it for the first time. Being present, here and now, though, just simply existing, is enough. It really is. Our journey begins, and what is that first action that you'll take? What do you do now? Do you kneel and kiss the ground? As Rumi says, there are 100 ways to do that. Do you reach out to another with compassion because you have forgiven yourself and you are freer now to love and be loved? Do you speak up for the rights of another because we are that we are, brothers and sisters from the same carbon molecules? How will you fill your blank slate today? How will you re-envision your life? And are you ready for a burning bush? Happy New Year, and welcome back to another year together.